From KUOW in Seattle, welcome to Soundside. I'm Libby Dankman. Caste is now a protected category in the city of Seattle. That means, much like race, religion, and gender identity, it's illegal to discriminate against someone on the basis of caste, say, when you rent out an apartment or hire someone for a job. The system of social hierarchy has existed for thousands of years, primarily in South Asian countries. India's constitution outlaws caste discrimination, but many members of the Dalit caste, historically the most marginalized group, still report unfair treatment. Dalits in the U.S. have reported discrimination in the workplace, in housing, and in social relationships. Shaluja Paik is Dalit and a professor at the University of Cincinnati with work focused on gender, Dalit studies, and human rights. She says something that may seem simple, like telling someone your last name, can lay the groundwork to be categorized and treated differently.
Before I entered the U.S., which was in 2004, everybody knew that I was Dalit. And some of these scholars thought that I must belong to a family of landlords or something. Otherwise, how could I come to the U.S.? These are some funny things that I came across. You know, people making these kind of judgments without knowing me, without knowing where I come from.
The ways that caste discrimination plays out are invisible to many Americans. And caste's influence in this country is not universally recognized or agreed upon by South Asians here. After the Cal State University system added caste to its anti-discrimination policy last year, two professors filed a lawsuit arguing the move unfairly singled out Indians and the Hindu religion. Seattle has been weighing questions of caste as more tech workers from South Asia have made homes here. And now it's officially wading into this complex civil rights issue, one that businesses and institutions across the country are increasingly grappling with. The city council vote last month made Seattle the first American city to ban caste discrimination. Sandhya Dirks covers race and identity for NPR. It's her job to detangle these kinds of complicated conversations. And even she agrees this is a tough one, starting with how to define caste.
There's almost no way to answer that in a sentence, which is one of the reasons that makes delving into this topic so complicated. But in the most basic sense, caste is a system of power, a hierarchical system of power that lays out what position in society you might be. So caste will determine what job you can have, how you can marry. Caste is part of many South Asian cultures, and it's all tangled up with religion, although it expands beyond one single religion. And it's also all tangled up with histories of colonialism because it was exploited by British imperialists when they colonized India. But caste itself, the best way to understand it really is as a hierarchical system of power.
What does caste discrimination look like in the United States?
I think it looks very different for different people, and the people to really ask this question of are the ones that feel that they have experienced it. But for many Dalits that I've talked to, those are people who self-identify as Dalit, who used to be called untouchables, they say in many ways what they've had to do is hide their identities. So sometimes it's not that they're necessarily experiencing discrimination outwardly, but they feel like they can only move through the world in secret, like they have to stay in the closet. That's something I hear a lot. There's a kind of a parallel there between talking about caste discrimination and talking about issues faced by the LGBTQ community. So there is a sense that they feel like they have to stay in the closet, that they can't come out as their true caste, that they have to keep it secret in order to be accepted, in order to move within communities. There's fear around being shunned. There's also the way it often plays out and the way we often hear about it is in terms of the workplace. Because we know the tech industry, which is huge in Seattle, huge in the Bay Area, the tech industry is one of the major movers of South Asians, that's Indians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, people from across the South Asian diaspora, to the States. And you have a lot of South Asians working together. And this is where we begin to hear claims that sort of caste discrimination is replicating itself, particularly within tech workplaces.
Sandhya, you've been following the Seattle City Council's decision to vote for a caste discrimination ban. What have you noticed about the way this policy developed?
Well, One of the things that's interesting about this is that I've seen policies like this adding caste as a protected category, right? So it's not sort of, it's adding it into protected categories like race, like gender, like sexual identity. It's played out in a lot of college campuses, right? Driven by conversations around young people and their experiences of caste, particularly South Asian young people. But this is the first time it sort of played out on this larger scale. There was a city before Santa Clara, which considered similar legislation, and that sort of devolved into, you know, these very contentious arguments. Those contentious arguments were played out again at the Seattle City Council. So in many ways, what it is that it's a broadening and an amplifying of an issue that's been brewing and that has caused a great deal of contention on this larger scale. I think what makes Seattle so interesting is in being the first city to really add caste as a protected category, it opens the door for more cities to do the same. So it's part of this longer story that you can trace back over a decade that caste equity advocates have been trying to get caste understood and accepted and to ban caste discrimination in various ways, to have awareness around caste discrimination. You know, their argument is that as South Asians have come over in increasing numbers, so has this hierarchical system of power, that it's come over to American shores and that we've not only recreated all of the wonderful, beautiful parts of Indian, Pakistani, South Asian culture, but we've also recreated some of these darker parts, right? This discrimination, these systems of power. And so what Seattle does is it becomes a kind of monumental moment in that story of the expansion of adding caste as a protected category. I don't think it's going to be the last place that we're going to see this kind of fight over caste.
Hmm. It's very complicated. Caste is a nuanced issue. It's wrapped up in history, class, religion, politics, economics, and the diaspora element of this, people coming to the United States, adds this other layer of complication. We're not going to get anywhere close to delving into all the complexities here. But as you watched this vote before the Seattle City Council, how did the nuances of the issue of caste emerge?
Well, this is very much a fight over what caste is. And there are different sides that believe that caste is a systemic issue in South Asian culture that, again, you know, spans religions and countries, but that they believe, you know, that it is a systemic issue, that it is systemically rooted, and that it is not only a systemically rooted issue, let's say back in India, but also in America. And then there are those who very firmly believe that caste is not a system of discrimination, that it's not a systemic issue, that there are maybe individual cases of bad behavior, but that there's not a systemic issue of caste. And they believe that even talking about caste actually creates caste consciousness. And that talking about caste and imposing the idea of caste onto Hinduism is actually Hindu-phobic. But then there are those who say, you know, look, we are those who identify as lower caste, and we're telling you this is a system of oppression. We've always been aware of our caste. So it's really about who gets to define caste. And that is a complicated issue because there are multiple ways to define it. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't truths. It is a system, a hierarchical system of power that has been passed down and is deeply embedded in South Asian culture. That is true. But whether cities decide to pass caste discrimination bans is whether or not they believe it is a systemic issue. That will be something that continues to be fought over by people who, for this is their identity, right? This is not some sort of, we're not just talking about, you know, a law that looks at zoning. We're talking about a law that gets to the very heart of people's identity. So, of course, you're going to have this incredibly contested discourse.
Why do you think the movement to ban caste discrimination is gaining momentum now?
I think it feels like it's picking up momentum now because of this vote in Seattle. And it is, but it's been something that's been accelerating for a while. There are people that are working very hard on this issue. There are activist groups that are working really hard on what they call the caste equity issue and in bringing to light this conversation around caste and in caste discrimination. And they've been doing so for years. But I really think the racial reckoning of 2020 is playing a role in the acceleration of this. Just like we started to have these conversations conversations, these complex conversations around racism. We're also having these complex conversations around casteism. And just like there is a huge contention happening, and just like there are forces that deny that racism is a systemic issue in this country, which I just want to say for the record, it is, racism is a systemic issue, there is also this contention around casteism and how it is or is not systemic. And so I think that we really got into warp speed with the racial reckoning, and that what we're seeing is a combination of Indian politics, right? You know, and the complications of having Hindu nationalism, rising Hindu nationalism with the BJP back in India. Hindu nationalism is not only sort of, you know, threatening violence against Muslims, but there's been a rise in violence against Dalits back in India. So that's happening at the same time as you're having this conversation about race exploding, as well as the backlash to the conversation about race. And those two things in parallel, right? These two things that are happening in, you know, two of the world's most important democracies are kind of colliding to have this conversation about caste in America, and to have people in progressive liberal cities like Seattle and others begin to discuss what we can do about caste and if we need to do something about caste in America.
It strikes me that as companies, cities, universities consider banning caste discrimination, there is also this big information gap for people who don't belong to a South Asian diaspora community. They probably would not recognize what caste discrimination looks like in a workplace or in an educational setting. Is part of this movement an educational component to try to inform folks who are not South Asian what caste is and how it plays out?
I mean, I think that's definitely at the heart of this matter. And of course, there's a big disagreement about what caste is and how it plays out. And so who gets to control that conversation is really part of what's being contested here. And that's why this is such a fight, right? Because it's really about the story of caste, the story of India, the story of South Asia. You know, I think that certainly folks on both sides would argue that this is an educational issue. And there is, you know, there are groups like Equality Labs, run by a woman named Thenmori Sundarajan, who's made it her mission to try to educate people about caste in the United States. She is a big proponent of these caste discrimination bans. Her opponents, right, those who, you know, mostly these are Hindu organizations who, you know, say that any caste ban is Hindu-phobic. They call Equality Labs a hate organization. They call it a hate group that's well-funded, and accuse, you know, her of wanting to kind of capture all the contracts to teach people about what caste is. Now, government contracts aren't usually that lucrative. Sometimes they are. Beyond all of that, it is really about who gets to decide what caste is. And the thing is, like, we do have knowledge about what caste is. We have deep historical knowledge about what it is. It is a complicated issue, right? But I think sometimes opponents say, it's so complicated, Americans can't deal with it. HR departments can't deal with it. And they use it as a reason not to have it added as a protected category. But I also want to point out that, like, you know, we have these protected classes. And so that's, it just adds this in there, right? And so, you know, much in the way that any kind of discrimination can be nuanced, you know, racism isn't always just outward KKK-style racism. We know today that racism is subtle and sometimes silent. We know the same with sexism, with the way gender plays out. We know the same with LGBTQ issues. No system of hierarchy, no system of power is sort of graspable in blatant black and white ways because it's subtly sewn into the way society functions. And so, you know, I would say that while caste is complex and there's much that I don't understand about it and I'm still learning, I think we also do understand how power works, and we can take lessons about how power works and try to apply those here.
Hmm. But the nature of power is that it's often invisible, right? And power structures can often be invisible. And it strikes me when you talk about the ways that the 2020 racial reckoning and George Floyd helped accelerate conversations about racism in the United States, and also sparked maybe a faster movement on caste issues in the United States. It's also bringing these very difficult feelings when you are part of a conversation and also have to recognize the part that you play in a power structure. It can be very difficult, painful, emotional. There can be all kinds of things that come up in that conversation. And what we're seeing around caste is a very heated response from groups who say, this is Hindu-phobic, this is damaging to South Asians in the United States and their perception.
Yes, some of those groups would even quibble with the use of South Asian, right? They would say, we're talking about Indians, we're talking about Hindus in India. Because, again, this is all wrapped up in politics that, you know, is both happening here, but has feet in many worlds. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there are folks who feel that talking about caste is creating caste or replicating caste. And there are folks who feel that the teaching of caste in middle schools to American children is Hindu-phobic. They say that even teaching caste is something that gets young Hindu-American children bullied. They say that it is an inventing caste where there is none, right? And yet those on the other side say, well, there very much is caste. We feel it. We experience it. And so it comes down to who gets to talk about caste, right? And who gets to say what role it plays in the way that it's threaded through not just Hinduism, not just India, but South Asian culture and other religions as well. Because it is a complex hierarchical system that has existed for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. And it's changed, right? It's not a static thing like any hierarchical system. You know, race has changed too. Italians didn't used to be white. Things shift. And so, you know, do we need to understand the entire history of caste to understand what caste is in America today? Maybe. But also, if we recognize it as a hierarchical system of power, can we add it as a protected category? That would certainly be the argument of those who seek to ban caste discrimination. They say all they're doing is protecting vulnerable people, right? And that no one should have to worry about these laws unless they discriminate. The other side kind of has this incredible fear that says, oh, they're trying to erase Hinduism entirely. It can be hard to understand how a law that bans discrimination might feel like a threat, particularly to Hindu Americans, because discrimination on the basis of religion is also banned. But I think for them, they really feel for you know, Hindu Americans who are fighting this, they really feel that somehow Hinduism is under threat. Again, on the other side, you know, they're saying we have a real problem of casteism in America and we need to protect the most vulnerable.
What will you be paying attention to, Sandhya, as the conversation about caste moves to different cities, universities, companies in the United States? What's next?
I will be paying attention to where it goes next and how it grows. This movement around caste awareness and caste equity is incredibly powerful within the South Asian community, incredibly divisive. And, you know, I think Seattle is just the beginning. I think that there are more cities, more places where legislation like this is going to once again put us in the center of this debate around who gets to define caste and around how we really understand systemic issues in this country. I mean, I think I want to go back to that again and again. We are having a major crisis in America around systems and around whether or not systems of power exist. And I think that caste in many ways is, in that sense, very similar to the issues happening around race.
Sandhya Dirks is a national correspondent covering race and identity for NPR. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Libby.
As Sandhya mentioned, broader conversations about casteism are beginning in some areas of American life as movements to pass caste equity policies collide with pushback from critics who feel these official steps are unnecessary or even harmful. We reached out to a few South Asian academics to learn what's important to keep in mind. One thing both professors we chatted with talked about was the ubiquity of caste issues across South Asian countries and religions. Caste status stratifies Muslim, Sikh, and Christian communities, as well as Hindu. Purna Matavan is an associate professor at the University of Washington's Department of History. And one common misconception she sees is the conflation of caste with religion.
In terms of seeing this purely as an activity targeted against Hindus, let's be very clear. The scholarship on this, both within South Asia as well as in the multiple South Asia diasporas globally, shows that this is a practice that is associated with more than one religious community, right? So South Asian Muslims, South Asian Sikhs, South Asian Christians, at some level or another, all have an awareness of caste. It is something that is deeply soaked into social interaction and has been for centuries.
Opponents of Seattle's new law question how common caste-based discrimination really is in the United States. But Tavin says the new ordinance may help people who have remained silent about their experiences to come out of the shadows.
The immediate practical effect is now we can name the elephant in the room. And I think it does open up the space for people to pursue some form of redress if they can document discrimination. But we also want to be attentive to the fact that every time somebody chooses to go down that road, it requires a lot of resources.
Tavin says those resources include access to legal representation. Shaluja Paik, the Dalit professor at the University of Cincinnati, stresses that the struggle to upend caste in the United States shouldn't be confined only to South Asian Americans.
This is a struggle for the larger humanity, and this is a fight for human rights. And I think that is why, you know, if we want to create a society that is fair and respects the dignity of every individual human being, all communities should participate in this and should support the cause so that we can fight caste discrimination.
Conversations about caste in the United States are ongoing, and Seattle will be a test case for how those conversations evolve. We'd love to hear your feedback or stories about how caste has played out in your own life. Email us at soundside@kuow.org. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at kuow.org.